ask you this. What if I had multi-protocol routers on the entire path between these two endpoints? Would it still make sense to do a tunnel, or should I just activate the multi-protocol routing capability?
It doesn't really make much sense in that point. You do end up taking a hit in performance because, of course, you have to have these two end systems running multinet to be able to do the encapsulation and decapsulation. And if you've got a dedicated system that you can provide for that, performance isn't really so much of an issue. But it's going to reduce the bandwidth you're going to have because it's going to increase the latency. So in that particular case, you're really better off just enabling DECnet on the multi-protocol routers. But the issue is then that now you have to worry about managing two protocols on a particular platform instead of just one, because you know you're going to have to, since you know you're going to have to manage DECnet on the VMS system anyway, you know, adding an extra circuit in usually isn't a big deal.
So running the TCP/IP only backbone might actually make sense in some environments as far as a network management load and things of that sort.
In some environments, yes. As I mentioned, there are a couple of universities I've run into that do not allow anything on their campus backbone aside from IP because they feel like they can manage IP. They understand it. And they actually tie together all of their DECnet hosts by having one DECnet host in each department running multinet with a DECnet over IP link going into a central system at the main computer facility. And at least the last time I talked to them, was running something on the order of 16 different DECnet over IP tunnels to each of these departments.
Tunneling and encapsulation is used when services are not deployed through that entire net. It's a way of jumping over an infrastructure. That's currently being used to support new technologies such as multicasting. Is this a generic technique we should be using in designing our protocols?
I fully think so. The nice thing about encapsulation like this, tunneling, is that you can employ a new protocol or deploy a new protocol in an area where you don't have the native network support for it. For example, if you look at some of the work that's going on with IP version 7, there's one particular proposal called SIP, the Simple Internet Protocol. There is testing going on the Internet today between end system implementations of SIP, even though there is no end-to-end SIP path between the two testing sites. They're using a scheme known as IPAE, IP address encapsulation, that allows you to establish a SIP connection, a quote connection, between two SIP hosts over an IP backbone. So the nice thing about this is it allows you to do rapid prototyping because you don't have to worry about replacing your entire network infrastructure. And it can end up saving you a lot of time and money in terms of development.
You think this is how the Internet is going to do its transition to the next IP, is by transitioning parts of the net and then using tunnels on the parts that haven't made it? Or is there a more sophisticated scheme we can use?
Well, it's probably going to depend somewhat on what proposal is chosen. If you look at the two current popular proposals, one is SIP, which is pretty much like straight IP, only with a 64-bit address space. There are a number of other changes, but it's not a radical departure. The other, however, is TUBA, which is TCP and UDP over the OSI connectionless networking protocol stack. That's a more radical departure, and while there is quite a bit of OSI work, traffic flowing around on the Internet over a number of multi-protocol backbones, when it comes to transitioning, you really are looking at a transition. It's not a... there's not really as much coexistence potentially possible as you have with, say, SIP and IPAE. But I think in both cases, you are looking at a situation where you're going to have to do a lot of encapsulation, a lot of tunneling, because you are going to have certain areas where you've got two hosts that want to communicate using CLNP, and there's only an IP backbone between them. And, of course, certainly, as is the case with SIP, it's planned all along that you'll have SIP tunnel over IP and IP tunnel over SIP, and they're even looking at even more general things like tunneling IP over IP.
Why would you do that?
It has a number of interesting benefits. One of which is in terms of supporting mobile hosts. You can have your host assigned a unique IP address, which you keep with you no matter where you go. And if you ever have to stop and plug in somewhere, you get a local network there, a local IP address, but you then establish an IP over IP link into your home facility, your central facility, giving you effectively a constant address no matter where you go. The other nice thing it provides you is a situation where you might have two different subnets of an IP network number separated by a different network number. IP in general doesn't deal well with partitioned subnets, but if you can establish an IP over IP link to tie the two subnets together, you've basically healed your subnet gap, and it gives you an interesting and very flexible way of doing, in particular, doing multiple path routing where, let's say you've got two paths between two sites, but one of the paths is a different network number. Well, if the primary path goes down, you can fail over using the backup path as long as you have this IP over IP tunnel to be able to maintain connectivity between the two sites.
Is this an approach that's going to scale? Or what's going to happen when every car is a mobile host and the car starts talking to traffic control and there's a million of those?
I don't think anybody really has a good concept of what's going to happen when every car and every toaster and every television has its own IP address or its own network address. It's sort of one of those things that's not just an order of magnitude problem, it's a several orders of magnitude problem over what people are used to dealing with now. It's certainly the case that the existing internet infrastructure could not even begin to handle that big of a jump, either in terms of address allocation or in terms of handling the routing. The internet right now is getting precariously close to the to an edge from which it's going to have a hard time backing off because there are too many network numbers in use and the existing routing infrastructure is having a hard time dealing with it. I really do think it's going to take a couple of leaps in technology before we can look at what a number of people have dubbed ToasterNet, which is, you know, pretty much every electromechanical device having its own addressable network, basically being an addressable network entity.
Will that be the internet that we know today, evolved, of course, or will it be a different thing? Will the internet just go away and become history?
That's another really tough one. I have to tell you, I cannot honestly tell you. There are times when I think the internet will get its act together and will have a long and fruitful history, and there are other times when I think that the internet is teetering precariously on the brink of disaster. I think that if any of the common carriers ever really get their act together and can come up with a low-cost internet work service, the internet as we know today may indeed disappear. I'm not convinced that the common carriers quite comprehend how to deal with that, how to do something like that. Sprint certainly has gotten into the business now. MCI has gotten into it to a certain extent, but none of them have really taken a big plunge in comparison to providing even, say, X25 service, which a number of the carriers do. So I really don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the near future, because I think that within the next 2 to 3 years, we'll get a good handle over where the internet is going to be going for the next 10 to 15 years. Told Ken Adelman, one of our founders, that it couldn't be done, that you could not do decknet over IP tunneling. Ken, of course, really, really hates being told that he can't do something, so he set out to prove the guy wrong. He developed the software. As it turns out, it's been very useful in use in the internet, in particular by NASA. NASA runs a very large DECnet network, formerly called SPAN, the Space Physics Analysis, currently, I believe, called NSI/DECnet. And basically, these guys need to be able to provide DECnet to some of the far reaches of the internet. Well, it's not really practical in many cases to establish a dedicated DECnet line from one of the NASA hub sites to a small college somewhere or to a research facility. And when you look at how these folks are connected anyway, they've already got an internet link. But the internet itself, of course, doesn't run DECnet. So being able to tunnel DECnet over the internet backbone to be able to reach into some of these smaller sites saves you a tremendous amount of money in extra line cost in terms of potentially having to swap out one router vendor for another if the existing router vendor doesn't support DECnet. There are quite a number of economies of scale that you can achieve by using this existing infrastructure. And NASA has definitely been one of our largest supporters in that area. Now, as it turns out, one of the other big uses that we've seen for running DECnet over IP are in certain campus environments where they do not allow anything else on their campus backbone aside from IP.
This is Geek of the Week, featuring interviews with prominent members of the technical community. Geek of the Week is brought to you by O'Reilly & Associates and by Sun Microsystems.